Hopefully. That's the operative word there. We're trying something different. This is a series that will raise a lot of issues and questions. And so we're trying a 21st century deal, and we'll see if it works out. And, you know, basically I'll come back out this morning. Different weeks we'll handle it different ways. We'll come out this morning, we'll throw a couple of the questions that are texted to us and just come out and talk about them for just a minute, just to interact so that, you know, I don't get to dictate everything that's said, which is probably a good thing. So this is a new series. It's, I think, an exciting time for us as we explore issues of faith and doubt. Can be a very hard thing, but it also can be a very good thing. We'll talk more about that in a minute. We also hope this will be a season in our church that compels us to interact with our culture a little bit. Because while we have struggles of faith and issues of doubt and questions, we also know that the people living in our culture, living in our world, living on our block, there are some people who are just skeptics. They would resonate with the people that were on the video. We also know that there are people who are seekers, who are they're curious about spiritual issues, but they don't know where to go or how to ask those questions. And we know there are also people who are new in their faith, and they're still kind of interacting with issues of deep doubt, even with a new faith that they have. And so we want to create an atmosphere here at Genesis where it's a safe place to interact with those questions. And the next several weeks, next 2 months, the months of October, November, we are going to ask some big questions and try to be very careful to act like we have it all figured out. But we are going to point to the scriptures and to Jesus and talk about how the person and work of Christ and the scriptures help us deal with these questions. But one of the things, the reasons that we as people have these doubt is because there are things that are part of our experience on this planet that are just monstrous. They are bigger than what we can comprehend or even think through when we really get to the bottom of it. And so we don't want to stand up going, hey, we've got it all figured out. What we want to say is we are fellow strugglers. But somehow Jesus is making a difference in our life, even in the midst of struggle. And so hopefully that'll kind of be the tenor of our discussion. But it will be a place where we examine some pretty big questions. To go along with that, we are actually basing the series off of a book called The Reason for God by a guy named Tim Keller. I really enjoy Tim Keller's stuff. He's a pastor in Manhattan who planted a church right down in the intellectual area of Manhattan. Has a lot of people who are in his church who are kind of all over the place when it comes to belief. And he wrote the book starting with them, knowing who his audience was. A lot of us, I've heard a couple people say, man, read it, but it's hard. It's really heady. Well, that's who he's speaking to. But boy, he has some great discussion about these issues. And I think it's important for us to not always be simplistic in our answers, but to really think through some of the struggles. He's interacting with a lot of cultural issues that are just in our world. A lot of the questions are being raised by groups that's kind of been labeled the new atheists. There's a kind of a new generation of people who are kind of attacking Christianity. And sometimes we tuck our tail and run from that. I don't think that's the right response. I think, and I'll bring this up later, but I think Jesus is big enough to handle the questions. And so we don't have to be afraid of those things. But he's kind of addressing some of the questions that they're raising. But they're not questions that kind of, we create a screen over here to just raise some of them. They're questions that people living on your block in your neighborhood probably have. And you probably look up here at some of these and go, I got to be here the week he talks about that, because that one issue doesn't make sense to me and it raises serious doubt. So that's kind of where we're going, just kind of priming the pump. Before I jump way into it, a couple things that I want to announce to you that are good things for our church. First of all, to our teenagers and their parents, we have an event at Christmas. We're going to a conference, and we really need registration, like the deadline is today. So if you're here and you forgot to bring your form, you can download it online. We should have some forms out on the table. Get that filled out. Get that in. Let us know you're going as quick as you can. It's called Extreme Winter. Really cool conference. Worth the effort. But we need to know today. And then dudes, if you are here and you are a dude, we want to invite you to come hang out with us next Saturday. We're going to go to the shooting range out in Pacific, St. Louis Skeet and Trap Club, and we're going to barbecue. So things that go with men really well, red meat and guns, right? But we just felt like that would be a cool way for guys to hang out, just to get to know one another. If you're a dad, bring your son. You're welcome to bring kids with you. We will have some guys who really know their way around guns if it's kind of a new thing to you. And if you're just like, listen, I don't want to shoot, I'm not into it, just come hang out with us, either way. But we need to know who's doing that today as well. There should be registration form out there. And you know, either let me know or fill out the form, drop it off at the information table, or email me today so we can kind of get a head count. We'll let the shooting range know how many people are going to be coming next Saturday. It'll be a good time. You know, in this series, we are going to wrestle with issues of God and doubt and struggles of faith. And there's a play by a guy named Samuel Beckett called Waiting for Godot that, you know, different publications have said that it was the most important play of the 20th century. And the basic gist of the play, there's two guys that are basically on stage the whole time. There are two other guys that kind of show up as the play goes on, but they just kind of, these two guys that are hanging on the stage, they interact with these other two guys in kind of with big question ways, but they're waiting for this guy called named Godot. But the thing is that Godot never shows up. So they spend two whole days just waiting, and they just kind of interact, they talk, they raise big questions of life, and there's just a lot of interesting conversation and discussion about struggle and about humanity and those sorts of things. But at the end of the play, what happens is they keep, at the end of each act, they go, okay, we're leaving, but they never leave. And there's kind of this imagery of these guys are on stage waiting for this guy named Godot. They've been waiting for him. He's never shown up. They are waiting now. He's never showed up. And you're left to wonder, will Godot ever appear? And most people read the play and believe that the guy is basically trying to communicate to the watcher of the play that this is the human experience when it comes to God. And many of you probably have felt this way at some point in time where you're looking for God. You want God to interact. You want God to intervene in life. You want God to demonstrate himself real to you. You want a sign from God, you know, something to fall out of the sky. I bought a book this week that has been all the Johnny Hart's cartoons about the Wizard of Id that were based on religion. I don't know if you ever read his cartoons in the newspaper, but the guy was actually a guy with a deep faith in Jesus. And one of the cartoons was a guy was sitting there praying. He said, I just need a sign from you, God. And then the next scene is this giant sign drops and almost crushes him, and it just says, I'm up here. We want that. We want to pray, and then a sign from God, boom, it shows up. And we want all of our doubts to be solved and to be struggled or answered. But sometimes we kind of feel like the guy's waiting for Godot, that we're here and we're questioning and we're waiting and we're hoping and we believe that Godot is going to show up. But at the end of the day, we're left with the same questions, the same doubts, the same struggles. And is that a bad thing? And I think the answer, both in scripture and in just personal life experiences, not necessarily. No, it's not a bad thing. In fact, in the book Reason for God, Tim Keller says this. He says, a faith without some doubts is like a human body without any antibodies in it. People who blithely go through life too busy or indifferent to ask hard questions about why they believe as they do will find themselves defenseless against either experience or tragedy or the probing questions of a smart skeptic. He's basically saying that our doubts are like the antibodies in our body, that when something foreign and that can make you sick comes into your body, your antibodies attack it. And that doubt is like that. If we as people do not have times where we examine faith, we wrestle with doubt, we look to Jesus, we look to the scriptures, but it's if we're not questioning faith, then when the events of life, the storms of life come, or when the struggles of somebody who seems to be really intelligent or some Discovery Channel program comes on that basically says they have found the thing that will cause Christianity to collapse, all of a sudden we like you know, people who get sick without the antibodies, we become people who all of a sudden we don't know what to do with that, and our faith is shaken at very least, and sometimes it literally collapses. And so how do we do that? And our goal in this series is really to help you interact with questions of doubt, to raise them. Some of us come in the room and we are way too Christian, which means from the time we were about 14, we felt like we had the whole world figured out and we had all the answers of life. Some of us need that shaken out of us. And we need to be real honest and know that most of that's really probably a facade. and that questions of doubt are a very natural part of the faith experience. But ultimately, when those doubts come in, if we end up wrestling with those, interacting with those in healthy ways, and really specifically run to the right place, the right person, that God will use those to build faith, even though it doesn't mean that every time I get to the end of the day, every question will necessarily be answered. And so there's a story in the Bible that just as we kind of launched this series, there's a really cool story in the Bible that is like a case study on the issue of doubt and on somebody who had deep doubts. It's in the book of John, chapter 20. If you have a Bible, take yours, open it up to the book of John. If you don't have a Bible, at the end of your rows, we have Bibles for you. Help us out if you're on the end, just pass them down. And we'll be on page 776 in that Bible as we look at the story about a guy named Thomas. Now, you may have heard the name Doubting Thomas. You're a Doubting Thomas. Well, that name actually comes from this text, as this guy named Thomas has serious doubts. So before we get to text, let me tell you about the story and let me tell you about Thomas. Thomas was a guy who the Bible doesn't tell us a ton about him other than the fact we do know that he was a twin. He had a twin. We don't know brother or sister. There is some speculation over whether or not his twin was actually one of the guys that were in Jesus' apostles, the disciples that followed Jesus. But his name literally means twin. In fact, the name Thomas is more of a nickname than a given name, but it's the name that he goes by in the Gospels. And Thomas was a twin, which, you know, as I read that, that speaks to me because obviously we have twin girls. He had the same experience as them growing up with somebody who was just his age and trying to figure out, was he the older one or the younger one? If he was the older one, he probably always used that as a point of leverage for his younger brother or sister. If he was the younger one, the older one probably always put him in his place. But he had this experience where somebody was the same age, went through the same struggles at the same time and all that kind of stuff. But eventually, this guy named Jesus, who came, the Son of God, showed up and called Thomas as one of the 12 men that would follow him, that would literally abandon everything, that would leave their jobs, their businesses, and follow Jesus. And Thomas follows Christ. He attaches himself to Jesus. He really gives himself fully to the cause of Jesus and follows Jesus as his teacher, his leader, what the Bible calls a rabbi, which is the one he gave his life to is the one who would teach him and lead him. And as Thomas followed him, he had some interesting experiences. He watched Jesus heal the blind and cause the lame to walk and teach and preach and do all the miracles that the Bible tells us about. And at times, this probably inspired great faith. At times, he probably struggled with what is he going to do with this. But he literally attached his entire life, his faith, his hopes to this guy. In fact, one time, Jesus is hanging out talking to his disciples, and he tells them that one of their friends, a guy named Lazarus, is sick, and that eventually Lazarus is going to die. And Jesus kind of throws out a hint that if they go try to interact with Lazarus, there may be some conflict, some struggle that could lead to some hardship for them. And Thomas is grabbing a sword going, Jesus, let's go. I'll go with you. And if we die, we all die together. I am in. I have bought into this, and if it costs me my life, you are somebody I am willing to die for. And so that's kind of Thomas' story. A little bit later in the story, Jesus is telling them that he's going to have to leave. That literally, he's kind of letting them know that he's going to go to the cross. But he says, I'm going to go to my Father's house. I'm going to build mansions. I'm going to build places for you. And I'm going to come back and receive you. And Thomas has an interesting intellectual question. Jesus, where are you going? And Jesus answers, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one goes to the Father except by way of me. But the story of Thomas is, even in the scriptures, one time he's ready to grab the sword and run with Jesus. Other times he's like, I'm not so sure I get you, Jesus. This fluctuation, do you ever resonate with that? And then Jesus, he's with Jesus, but on the night that we recognize as Good Friday, Jesus is arrested. He is crucified. He's crucified on Good Friday, arrested on Thursday night, crucified on Friday. Thomas is one of the people who disbanded, who ran away from the situation and the scene. And he ends up understanding and knowing that Jesus dies on a Roman cross. 3 days later, though, something happens that the other guys that are Jesus' followers, it shapes their world, but it leaves Thomas with great questions. Because basically, they show up at the tomb, they see the empty tomb, and they come back, and these guys who've been walking with Jesus and hanging out with Jesus are together, and Jesus shows up, physically shows up in a room, and he shows them his hands, his feet, and they experience the physical bodily resurrection of Jesus. Now, we look at this, And we think, okay, simple story that, you know, these guys are in a room, they see Jesus, wow, that's cool. Have you ever stopped to think about how you would interact with that situation? How difficult even seeing Jesus standing there would be to believe. Because their experience is the same as ours. We go to funerals, that's it. There's not, hooray, we're going to go to lunch 3 days later. But they see Jesus, but something happens. Thomas is not with them. And they find Thomas, and they begin to talk to him, say, listen, we've seen Jesus. He's alive. And Thomas has the same kind of response I think most of us have as we interact with some of these deep questions, these deep struggles. And this is where the story takes us. In chapter 21 of the book of John, and we'll begin with, chapter 20 of the book of John, we'll begin with verse 24. It says, now Thomas, one of the 12, called the twin, was not with him when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, we have seen the Lord. But he said to them, and listen to Thomas's response and see if this is the way either you've responded at some point in time or you've seen others. Because what happens is we see people have this strong faith. They tend to believe, and it just seems to always work for them. It always connects. But something goes off on the inside of me that goes, I can't be there. I try, but I cannot be there. And he's hearing these guys that he loves, he knows, he's been with nonstop for 3 years, say, we saw Jesus. But Thomas' response, his intellectual and heart response is this. He says, unless I see his hands, the mark of the nails, place my finger into the mark of the nails, place my hand into his side, I'll never believe. I mean, I want to. Dude, I was in. I mean, I even told him I'd die with him. But this event has shaken me too much. I can't do it. And look at the response. This is what happens 8 days later. What's hard about this is that 8 days later just kind of crops in there. It's literally the next Sunday. Jesus rose on a Sunday. Hebrews counted days. Any part of a day counted as a whole day. So 8 days later, which means the next Sunday. All this is going to change. But this is what we want. What we really want is to say later that night, we don't want Jesus to leave Thomas hanging for a week, and we don't want Jesus to leave us hanging with our doubt for any season of time. But 8 days later, his disciples were inside again and Thomas with them. And although the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, peace be with you. The same experience the disciples had a week again is happening over again. Now Jesus is with him, and then he said to Thomas, put your finger here and see my hands. Put your hand in the place of my side. Do not disbelieve, but believe. Thomas answered and said to him, and this statement is the highlight. It is the pinnacle. It is the absolute thesis and conclusion of the entire book of John, and it is actually the thesis and conclusion of the whole Bible. Thomas looks at him and says, my Lord and my God. And Jesus said to him, have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. And Jesus ultimately looks at Thomas and he says, listen, you saw me, now you believe. I presented you the evidence and it was physical right here with you evidence. But there's going to be a lot of people who come after you that are going to come to believe in me. But the physical part of this is not going to happen. And here's what Jesus says. If that's you, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to see you through. I'm going to make it work for you. We come to these issues. We have doubts. Jesus does not take Thomas and ostracize him. He does not ridicule him. He does not scream at him for having doubts. He shows up and answers his struggle. And I want to let you know, and this is just kind of where we're going, that it's okay to come to Jesus with your struggles. It's okay to come to Jesus with your doubts. He's capable of dealing with them and seeing you through. So why do we have these doubts? Well, anytime you build a list to try to teach and give ideas, you have a tendency to, something's gonna end up being left out. But I kind of came up with a list of maybe 5 reasons people end up having different doubts. See if your doubts fall under one of these 5 categories, all right? First category, I think people end up with having some sources of doubt that people have doubt is because of intellectual reasons. you were sitting in the college classroom. I'll never forget my first college class. Dr. Granger was the professor. It was Biology 101 at UMSL. And the class had about 450, 500 students in it. I went to a little bitty small high school, St. Louis Area High School, but there were under 100 people in my graduating class. My first college class is in a lecture hall, huge place, about 450, 500 people in a class. And the first thing that this professor basically said after he came up and introduced himself and showed us the syllabus is he looked out in the crowd and he said, "My goal for this class is that if you're a Christian, my hope is to just totally annihilate your faith." I mean, that's like his opening statement in a class. And then for the next several weeks, did everything he could just to do everything, to rock everything that I'd grown up to believe and tell me that I was simple-minded, that I didn't understand anything, that if I really was an intellectual, if I would just think through things, I would end up agreeing with him. And most of us at some point in time have probably come into contact with somebody who pushed back on Christianity and almost to the point sometimes of ridiculing it, making it sound like it's the simple, ignorant belief system over against the reasonable belief that is naturalism. And all of a sudden, we began to look at things and hear things and struggle with these issues. And all of a sudden, in our intellect, we begin to go, "Boy, I don't know. What if they're right? How do I deal with this?" And all of a sudden, there's intellectual reasons for us to have doubt. And another reason sometimes we end up with doubts is because of experiential reasons. That the storm of life showed up, and either yourself or somebody you knew went through a season of deep heartache, deep suffering, deep pain. The loss of, you know, somebody. I was with a family yesterday where it was my sister's birthday yesterday, and there was a couple who had his dad with him, and he had Alzheimer's. You know, when those sort of things come along in life, all of a sudden you question, why? Where is this coming from? Why is this taking place? How do I interact with this? And everybody in this room has had situations like this where somebody suffered. But maybe for you, that's become a point either now or in your life in the past where the suffering and the pain and the struggle has just totally rocked your boat. And you literally have deep experiential reasons, experiential things that have left you feeling like, "God, where are you? Why are you not showing up and just resolving this right now for me?" Another reason people experience doubt is because of moral reasons. I think there's a lot of us, sometimes we wrestle with doubt because we look at what Christianity teaches and what Christianity says, and in our very heart, we go, "Listen, if Christianity's true, when it goes all the way to the end of its teaching, there are going to be things that I want to do and I want to be that don't resolve with that. And I really don't want anybody telling me what I have to do or what I can do." And what happens is because we take that stance and we live with, you know, a moral conflict with our Creator, all of a sudden it creates these deep doubts in our head because we go, "Well, if God's really real, why don't I want to do these things? Why is it that I've kind of dug my heels in, and I sometimes it's even, why am I getting away with it?" And sometimes there are deep moral reasons. For others, that it's not just that we've failed, that we've struggled, and that we kind of have dug our heels in and said, "This is not what I want." But it's happened over a season of lifetime, and all of a sudden you begin to feel the brokenness and the pain that comes from sinfulness. And the outcome is that it's not that you have dug your heels in against God, or at least not right now. It's that now you have things in your life that you cannot shake. And maybe you've become a Christian and you're following Jesus, but man, there are things in your life that no matter how hard you try, you cannot overcome them. No matter how much you seek, it just feels like you're left alone in the struggle and you have doubt. There's moral reasons people have doubt. Another possibility is that there's relational reasons. That it's because you have a relationship with somebody. A lot of times this is where the question of, can Jesus really be the only way, comes up. That I have these friends, they're good people, they really care for me, they're better than most of the Christians I know. And you're telling me that because they don't believe in Jesus? And somehow we feel like Jesus or Christianity has marginalized people that we really care for, and we have relational issues that lead to questions of doubt, questions of struggle. And the last reason is what I'm going to call schizophrenic reasons. This is not necessarily that you are schizophrenic, although you may resonate with the poem, "Roses are red, violets are blue, I'm schizophrenic and so am I." Some of you guys are like, "I don't get it." That's all right. But all of a sudden, here's what I mean with this, okay? either in our own lives, but really specifically, we see this in the lives of other people. That there are people who claim to have faith. They claim to be Christians. They claim to be followers of Jesus. But that faith is dichotomized, meaning on Sunday, they have a certain persona, a certain idea. They present themselves in a certain way. They live for a certain thing. But when they walk out of church and they leave here, all of a sudden their life is radically different than what they claimed it should have been on Sunday. And these people who we see that say, I believe in God, and God makes a difference in my life, are no different the rest of the week than I am. No different the rest of the week than other people who say they believe in God. And we have this thing that goes off on the inside of us that says, if this thing is real, if this thing is genuine, then the people who have bought into it ought to be different. Their lives ought to reflect what they say they really believe. And all of a sudden there's deep doubt because we look at how sometimes Christians treat each other. We look at how Christians have treated people who are broken and hurting. We look at how people who claim to be Christians deal with moral issues. And when you open the Bible and it says, you know, don't do this, and Christians just go, I'm gonna do it anyway. I don't care what the Bible says. I'm gonna live however the heck I want to. And people who are honestly seeking look at this and they go, they're schizophrenic. They're one way, not one time, and one way another. They have two personalities. They have a split personality. And if this thing is real, there have got to be people that it is so seeped into their soul that it really makes a difference in every walk of life. And what happens, I run into a lot of people that their doubts are because you and I live schizophrenic lives. We have a split personality. And ultimately, in the depths of who we are, if you're a follower of Jesus, we do not believe in this thing deeply enough that it really transforms us. And if God is real, it ought to matter, right? Now, you may end up with other reasons, but there's five. And my guess is that if you really examine your sources of doubt and your sources of struggle, you'll say, man, in one of these areas, something has happened in my life where I've seen this, and it's shaken my faith. It's led me to think, man, there's other options and that kind of stuff. And so what I want to do for just a few minutes this morning is I want to go back to this story and say, all right, what do you do with that? What do you do with your doubts? How do you interact with these things when they arise? And I think this story gives us a few clues, just a few clues on how we can deal with our struggles, deal with our issues of doubt, and interact with them. But just as kind of a precursor, my hope is that this entire series will accomplish these three tasks as we kind of go through it, all right? And so we're going to learn from Thomas, from Jesus, as he interacts with Thomas, just some clues on how, if you're here this morning and you have deep doubts about your faith, what you can do with it. And the first thing we kind of learn from this is that we need to doubt our doubts. Hence the title of the series, Doubt Our Doubts. We need to look at our belief systems and the things that we're saying about Christianity and realize that we also come into every conversation with some presuppositions and some assumptions. Look at verses 24 and verse 25. Verse 24 and 25, he says, Thomas, one of the 12, called the twin, was not with them when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, we have seen the Lord. But he said to them, unless I see his hands and the mark of the nails and place my fingers into the mark of the nails and place my hand into the side, I will never believe. In other words, what Thomas tells his friends is, I hear you, but there's got to be an explanation. I hear you and I know you believe and you're my friends. I don't think you're necessarily lying to me, but there has got to be a way to explain what you were feeling, what you were believing. This is what goes on. You know, a lot of times skeptics will look at people who are followers of Jesus and they either will marginalize them or they will go, listen, I hear that you have this existential, experiential encounter with this God that you claim to believe in, but there's got to be naturalistic ways to explain your phenomena, your experience, your interaction. And ultimately, we come to these issues and there tend to be either natural or supernatural explanations. In fact, there's a guy named Richard Dawkins who is, you know, I kind of mentioned these guys who are kind of the new atheists. And he said this about the ultimate struggle. He said, the big war is not between creation and evolution, but against naturalism and supernaturalism. In other words, when it comes to the end of the day, we are going to look at this and say, you know, there is something greater than me in this universe that has interacted with my experience, and there are the answers have supernatural explanations, or it can be explained solely by what I could see, touch, taste, feel, smell. And Thomas, at this point in time, brings his presuppositions. Because if you go to Thomas and say, does resurrection happen before this? His answer is no. His experience, his intellect, everything that he brings to the story says this stuff doesn't happen. But the thing is, he can't prove that. He walks into this experience with some presuppositions. He walks into the situation with some doubts that are based on his ultimate faith issues. And that's the thing. The deal is that when we look at these big questions, and if you even struggle with them, or friends you have struggle with these big questions, and they say, I don't think Christianity can be true because it claims to be exclusive and there's got to be more than one religion. I don't think Christianity is true because how can God allow suffering? As we ask those questions and we have doubts that arise from those questions, when we create an alternate answer to the question, what we have done is we have created an alternate belief system that really goes deep into our soul. And these things aren't, you know, you can't necessarily prove them. You know, if somebody says, I don't believe Christianity can be the only way, can you prove that? I mean, is there an empirical way to bring that scientifically and answer that question? The answer is no, but when people come to these issues, they have deep-seated beliefs that lie underneath all of our struggles and all of our doubts. And those beliefs came from different things. And what we learned from Thomas, and I want to encourage you to begin considering, is that we need to doubt those doubts, meaning that we need to give as much scrutiny to the alternative answer as we tend to give to Christianity. We will write off the Christian, the biblical response, because right at this moment, it can't be proven. But the same issues arise when we look at all these other issues, whether it's creation evolution, whether it's can the Bible be real, all these kind of things, that people who challenge, raise doubts, enter into the discussion with the same core issue, which is they hold a set of beliefs that at the bottom, at the end of the day, they can't be proven. But they are holding it. See, people want to say it's faith versus reason. That you know, on Sunday, you express your faith, but when you get to school, it's issues of reason. That your brain should be engaged on Monday through Friday, and on Sunday, your heart should be engaged. And the Bible never really presents that kind of dichotomy, that there's a separation. But see, it's not really faith versus reason. At the end of the day, it's faith versus faith. I find it really interesting that, you know, every 2 or 3 months, there is a publication that publishes the next great thing that's going to attack theism, the belief in God. And that next great thing that's going to attack theism, it's amazing how the Discovery Channel just runs real quick and has a documentary on it just like that. I mean, you know, whether it's We Found the Tomb of Jesus, or there's new gospels, and this guy named, there's a gospel attributed to Thomas, this guy that we're talking about, that they did, you know, all kinds of stuff about, well, we found the gospel of Thomas, never mind that it was actually written, and very, very accurately, about 300 years after Thomas lived, we found this great gospel. Or now it's that they found the missing link. I don't know if you've heard about this, but in Egypt they found this skeleton, and they've kind of pieced pieces together, and they've said, well, we found the missing link. And now, I mean, I just saw last night Discovery Channel is already, I mean, this is just really new things that have hit the presses, and now we're going to throw out a new story, a new documentary on it. And what happens is every time these things take place, Christians, we tend to get a little nervous because we're like, okay, maybe the easiest thing for me to do is to just run and hide in my bedroom and like have this hum and this aura about me and just not listen because it's going to rock my faith. But what's amazing is every time these things come out, it doesn't take long for people who are in the philosophical world to go at the people who are kind of proposing these ideas and to expose the fact that as they are making their documentaries and writing their books, they have this huge set of presuppositions that they are not doubting. They are coming at Christianity full bore saying, don't believe it, but they have a whole set of belief systems that they come out that ultimately are just as much faith-based as a person's belief in Jesus. And what happens in the story is that Thomas comes into the situation going, I cannot believe this. Unless I touch it, I feel it, unless I have empirical evidence, it can't be true. And so Jesus ultimately answers those doubts, but I just want to encourage you that as we go through this series, whether it's yours or somebody else's, be willing to scrutinize any faith position with the same scrutiny. Meaning, scrutinize Christianity. If you're here and you're one of those people who's like, I'm a Christian and I've never had doubt, it's time for you to take an honest look at your faith and scrutinize your presuppositions. But if you're somebody who's coming going, I can't believe unless I taste it, touch it, feel it, experience it, I don't know how to interact with it, I would encourage you to doubt your doubts. And that's what we hope to do. The second thing I think we learned from this, the second kind of clue what to do with your doubts, is then search for truth. Search for the truth. It is interesting that we live in a culture where within a matter of weeks, Bill Maher, you guys know who Bill Maher is? You know, he is agnostic. He's a comedian who's got a TV show. Who, you know, his approach, total approach to life is to basically question, theism, question belief in God, and really to a point of being really critical and negative. And then Ben Stein. Do you guys know who Ben Stein is? Anyone? Those of you who don't know, he's in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, okay? So here's my movie reference for today. He's one of the teachers. But he was a speech writer for Ronald Reagan, and he's actually a Jewish person who believes in God. That they would both create a documentary that got released, put in theaters, that a lot of people went and saw it, right about the same time with the same premise. These two guys ended up with documentaries with the same premise, which was the other side has too much of the voice, they are wrong, and the problem will be solved if we can pull their voice away. Both documentaries, Religious, which I don't necessarily suggest you watch. It's pretty crude. And I can't remember Stein's Expelled. Same premise, though. Ben Stein says, we believe in God, and Christians or theists are not getting a voice in the scientific world. They are the ones who hold all the power, and we're trying to speak into those issues, and nobody will let us. And so they're wrong, and not only are they wrong, but they need to have their power removed. And Bill Maher says, the problem is that people who believe in God are the issue. They have all the voice, and I'm just trying to raise the issue so some of the others who don't believe in God will rally around that and help decrease their voice because they are the problem. Interesting culture that we live in. And in the midst of this, we struggle with doubt, and the issue is, how do we seek truth? How do we search for truth? How do we interact with this? And in the story, in verses 26 through 27, some things happen. Verse 26, he says, 8 days later, the disciples were inside again, and Thomas was with them. And here's the one thing I will encourage you. This text is really cool because it points out the fact that Thomas didn't run from his doubt. He wasn't with these other guys who had seen Jesus intellectually and with his heart, but he was with his presence. And a lot of times when we have issues of doubt, we want to pull inside, we want to go away, we just want to get away from anybody who, especially anybody who will help us wrestle with issues of faith. And I want to tell you, that's the wrong response. The right way to deal with it is to run to the people of God. We hope that it's here, that you hang out with us, but somewhere you need a people. You need a family of faith that will walk you through your pain, your struggle, and your doubts with you. Thomas did not hear the disciple's story and go, guys, you're nuts. I'm out of here. 8 days later, he is with them. He's interacting with them. And it says, while he was with them, verse 26, Thomas was with them and all the doors were locked. Jesus came and stood among them and said, peace be with you. Then he said to Thomas, put your finger here and see my hands. Put your hand and place in my side and do not disbelieve, but believe. And here's the point here. Part of the struggle, and this is what I want to tell you. For 2,000 years, people have been coming to Christians, people who've been following Jesus, people who have said, I will give my life to him, and saying, what you believe is crazy, what you believe is wrong. Let me give you all the reasons. And for 2,000 years, people have been finding that Christ is able to deal with the answers. Not that I'm able to deal with them, that Jesus is enough. See, imagine just for a minute this story, okay? And this is your story. You are on the edge of a cliff and you turn around, there's a big old fat grizzly bear who is bearing down on you, and you have two options. You're either gonna take the grizzly bear on or you're gonna jump. And the cliff is huge. I mean, it's a big, long fall. And you look over the edge of the cliff, and there's three trees sticking out from the edge of the cliff. I mean, it's just kind of dangling out there. Three trees. At that moment, when you determine my only option is to jump, you have to choose which tree. And the question is not, will I have strong enough faith in the tree? The question is there a tree that is strong enough to hold me? The issue when we come to struggles in our faith is not, man, I've got to have strong faith. The issue is I've got to have faith in something that can hold me when the storms come. I've got to have faith that will give me the strength to endure. That whether I jump off like Arnold Schwarzenegger or I jump off the cliff like Woody Allen, that the thing that I grab hold of will hold me. That's the issue. And the beauty of this story is that Thomas for 3 years has been holding on to the Jesus tree. He's even willing to die, and he feels like the tree is breaking off in his hands. And then Jesus shows up. And notice how the things, here, what did Thomas say? Unless I see him, literally look at it. Unless I see his hands, the mark of the nails, and place my finger into the mark of the nails, place my hand into his side, I will never believe. Look at what Jesus says. Put your finger here and see my hands. Put your hand and place in my side. Do not. Do you hear what Jesus does? It's almost, ha ha, like Jesus was in the room with him, ha ha, when he raised the question. See, you're here, and I know, listen, all of us go through times where we're like, whether it's intellectual reasons or experiential, whatever the reason is, we feel like part of my struggle is that I don't even think Jesus knows my struggle. And I just want to tell you, pursue him. Grab hold. Thomas thought it was breaking, and he found that the branch was stronger than he ever imagined. Because at the end of the day, when Thomas walks out of this room, he understood that it wasn't just some rah-rah, I'm walking with my rabbi. He had grabbed onto the one who defeated even death. And Jesus can handle the questions. Let me just settle it for you. There is not going to be a question that raises about our faith if you're a follower of Jesus that is going to unravel Christianity. Because all truth is God's truth. And he is big enough to deal with it. Now, it doesn't mean everybody's going to believe. But I can promise you, whether you jump with all the faith in the world or your leap off that cliff is just a nervous, helpless, it's not the strength of your faith. It's the strength of the one you hold on to. And Jesus will handle it. Trust him. And that's what you do with your doubt. Ultimately, Jesus says, blessed are you because you saw me. There are going to be a lot of people who never see me and they still believe. And what's he say? Those people will be blessed. There are going to be times in your life where the only thing you can do is just believe. I'm going to tell you, you'll be blessed. Because Jesus is capable of seeing you through any will. So hang out with the people of God and just keep holding on. And find the goodness of Jesus, because for 2,000 years there have been people after people after people. This is their story. He'll see you through. And the last thing I want to tell you is then look at the tomb. Because, see, what happens is we see in the fact that Jesus is alive the ultimate hope in the story. And ultimately, this is the one thing that an unbelieving world doesn't quite know what to do with. There is this guy who was crucified, died a horrible death, and he's walking around. There's no answers to that. I'm going to come up with crazy theories. Good Lord, the nuttiest one I've ever heard is the mushroom theory. That Jesus went to India, spent a whole bunch of time there before he shows up back in the New Testament learning how to smoke mushrooms so that, you know, when they crucified him, he could go, like, do the shrooms right before they crucified him. They'd think he's dead, and then he could have this existential, esoteric experience, and 3 days later, he'd wake up from his mushroom high and come back and show everybody, hey, I'm alive. I mean, for real, he was crucified by Roman soldiers who knew how to put somebody down. That's just nuts. But boy, we'll come up with creative ways to explain it away. Look at the tomb. And see, here's the deal. We like fairy tales. We like the story where the prince gets the princess gets the crown and the frog becomes a prince and the story wins. But our experience often looks at the fairy tales. I was sitting in bed last night watching The Rookie. Love that movie. It's a fairy tale. We like those stories, but what happens is our experience says those stories aren't real. That the frog does not become a prince. The princess does not get the slipper. And the beauty of the gospel is that the story of Jesus says, yes, it is. Fairy tales do happen. Jesus is alive. Look to the tomb. And so that'll be the challenge. We're going to keep looking at Jesus and saying that the gospel answer is that Jesus is alive. And so I just want to challenge you. We're about to walk through some pretty heavy doubts. You're going to come to him, and some of them are going to be hard for you. And I want to tell you that it's okay. And I know that even this morning, I'm speaking to three groups. I'm speaking to people who are skeptics who go, I don't buy into it. I just can't get it. I got to touch it, taste it, see it. Feel it. There's got to be an explanation for this. There's some of you who are seekers. You're in this mode of, I am buying into Jesus a little bit step by step, but I still have these deep struggles. And some of us come in this room way too Christian. We're almost afraid to doubt even our belief. Don't be afraid of it. Let those antibodies build up in your life. Because, I mean, all of us go through a stage where we are like Thomas. We doubt, we struggle, and we have issues. As I was doing this, I came across a song, and then Nick, I think from midnight till 4 a.m., I couldn't believe he did this when I showed up this morning, made us a video just to help us kind of, as I close my talk this morning, just leave it with questions and this struggle of being a doubting Thomas. And it's a cool song, cool video that Nick put together for us. I want you to watch the screens, and then I'll come back and answer any questions in a few minutes.